I'm Marco Werman, and this is The World, a co-production of the BBC World Service, PRI, and WGBH Boston. Radio has had a dark history in Rwanda. The station Radio Mille Collines helped incite the 1994 genocide that killed some 800,000 people. But radio remains Rwanda's most popular media source. One station, Contact FM, is trying to bring a more modern sensibility to Rwanda's airwaves, and it's pushing some of the boundaries the government has put in place. The World's Mary Kay Magstad visited the station in the capital, Kigali.
Albert Rudatsimbura starts his day in the radio station he founded, walking past posters of Bob Marley, Che Guevara, and Jimi Hendrix. Rudatsimbura launched the station in the last days of 2004 with an old friend, who happens to be the brother-in-law of President Paul Kagame. The first thing on the air was a recording of Miles Davis playing So What from Kind of Blue. Rudatsimbura is a musician himself. He's also a returnee, having grown up in Belgium. When he settled in post-genocide Rwanda, he says, he realized something was missing from the radio scene.
Before we started, it was only the state radio. So that was the model. So we wanted just to show what it should be. You know, having funny breakfast shows, nice news. You must have noticed the kind of a post-genocide trauma, self-censorship culture. So we try to tell people that things could be different.
The station now has about 2 million listeners, a fifth of Rwanda's population. It offers music, call-in shows, debate, and news, and has about a dozen young reporters.
Bonjour. Morning.
They gather daily for an editorial meeting.
This is Contact FM Newsroom.
On this morning, one story in the works is about an illegal government detention center for street kids and vagrants.
Who decides when you can walk out? Based on what? When do they decide?
The reporter on the story is 25-year-old Richard Ndayambaje. I ask what happens if you write something the government doesn't like.
You never know what happens to you, but all you have to do as a journalist, I think, is to report the truth and, you know, wait to see what happens, whether the story makes an impact.
He says things are already better than when he started out in journalism 4 years ago. There are now dozens of Rwandan news media outlets, and the government is considering passing freedom of information legislation. Even so, critics of the government say press freedom in Rwanda remains seriously limited. Karina Tersakian is a senior researcher for Human Rights Watch. She was kicked out of Rwanda last year and now lives in London.
Everyone now knows the very negative role that the media played in the run-up to the genocide, and I think any responsible government would take measures to avoid that. But unfortunately, what has been happening instead is that this very vaguely defined offense of genocide ideology has been used to target government critics, not only journalists, but also opposition politicians and even ordinary Rwandans.
According to a Rwandan Senate report, about 200 people were convicted on the charge of genocide ideology from 2001 to 2006. Some were sentenced to years in prison. Rights groups have expressed concern about how many journalists have been convicted on this charge. Shaika Kanuma, editor of the newspaper Rwanda Focus, says such rights groups should take a closer look at what some of the convicted journalists have been writing.
You'll find someone writing that Hutus, actually it's their time to rise up. We are talking just 17 years after the genocide. And they'll go out and be publishing stuff that includes incitement.
President Paul Kagame makes no apologies for restricting speech he believes could reopen old wounds. At a recent news conference, he didn't try to hide his disdain for human rights groups that criticize his government.
We live in this world where some people think they're more right or even righteous than others.
Kagame's supporters say he has helped bring Rwanda back from the dead, that his government has restored social stability, built up the economy, and encouraged reconciliation, mostly. Others say he rules with too heavy a hand. Some ask why Kagame suspended two newspapers critical of him in the run-up to last year's national elections, why several journalists say they received threats or had been roughed up and had to flee the country. Vocal critic Charles Ingabire fled the country and was living in Uganda when he was shot dead last month, coming out of a bar. Another journalist was killed in Rwanda last year. The government has denied involvement in both cases. Rights groups have called for independent investigations. Karina Tersakian of Human Rights Watch.
The climate for independent journalists in Rwanda right now is pretty bleak.
By independent, she means those who criticize the government. Rwanda Focus editor Shayaka Kanuma argues, as rain pours down outside the pavilion we're in, that there is room for criticism, just not for lies.
I know that Paul Kagame is not a perfect president. He's not a perfect person. But when I see the terrible lies people tell, I know the kind of challenges we face as journalists in this country, but does that amount to abuse of human rights? Far from the case.
Back at Contact FM, owner Albert Rudatsimbura says journalism still has a long way to go in Rwanda, but he and his staff are trying. The station now has a weekend talk show called Crossfire. He says the show's free exchange of ideas can get pretty heated. I ask if there's also room in Rwanda for political satire, something like The Daily Show.
I think that it will take some time. You need the material to brew political satire. I mean, you need to see what politicians are doing. And most of the time, that is not public enough.
He says there's a funny YouTube video of a Rwandan comedian imitating President Kagame.
Same voice, same everything, you know. And I could see that some guys in the room were like, uh-oh, is this correct? Is this PC? You know, and even the president was there. And because he had a big laugh, I mean, everyone started to feel relaxed, you know. But I could see that some guys were stressed.
What Rwandans need, even more than satire, Rudatsimbura says, is to lose their submissive attitude toward power.
For people to understand that in a society like this, people are citizens. And in a society where you have citizens, we're not supposed to be treated as subjects. It's not a king there.
The call-in programs at Contact FM try to encourage people to speak up. And never are there more calls, Rudatsimbura says, than in the week each April when the station opens up the lines to commemorate the genocide. Survivors call in. A couple of perpetrators have called in to apologize.
Another case that we had also, we had a call. A couple of seconds, a guy saying, you know what? What we did in 94, we'll do it again.
The caller was referring to the genocide. His phone number was traced and he was arrested. Rudatsimbura says more young people are calling in these days and talking about the genocide as history. About half of Rwandans are too young to remember it. The government's policy to squelch hate speech and even mentions of ethnic divisions means they've grown up thinking of themselves not as Hutu or Tutsi, but as Rwandan. Whether that's come at too high a cost to free speech is open to debate. But a recent survey by the Prosperity Index in London found that most Rwandans feel they have adequate personal freedoms and trust their government. Less than a third said they trust each other. For The World, I'm Mary Kay Magstead, Kigali, Rwanda.